Now, time for a catch-up on stories that have been making headlines around the world this week on World Report with Justin McCarthy.
Good morning. On today's programme, the domestic troubles of Canada's leader and how a building collapse in Cameroon has put the focus on poor construction standards there. But first we go to Brazil, where police violence has left 45 people dead in a series of enforcement operations across three states. Human rights entities have decried the killings, alleging excessive use of force amid complaints of torture and execution. The killings mark the latest chapter in a long history of police violence in South America's largest country. From Sao Paulo, Sam Cowie reports.
The police operation dubbed Shield began in Sao Paulo's Baixada Santista coastal region the Friday before last. It was launched after an officer from Sao Paulo's elite military police unit, HOTA, was shot and killed, with another officer wounded in the Villa Zilda neighborhood. After 6 days, 16 people were killed and 58 suspects were arrested, including some wanted by the justice system. The operation drew criticism from the federal government, with the Minister of Justice, Flavio Gino, raising concerns about the proportionality of the police response to the crime. Meanwhile, Sao Paulo Governor Tarcísio de Freitas said accusations of excessive force would be investigated, but he defended police work in dangerous environments. "There is no such thing as fighting crime without collateral effects," he said this week. Governor Freitas is seen as a possible future presidential candidate. He was a minister in the government of far-right former President Jair Bolsonaro, who has praised police violence throughout his career as a politician. Since emerging from a 21-year military dictatorship and holding general elections in 1989, Brazil has been governed by centre-right, left-wing and far-right governments. During this time, poverty and hunger dropped significantly, before rising again as the country battled recession and then economic downturn, exacerbated by the coronavirus pandemic. Brazil swung back to the left last year with an historic third-time election of former union leader Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva's defeat of far-right Bolsonaro. The country also recently gained an investment rating upgrade, with most economists giving the country a decent midterm outlook. Since the return to democracy, however, throughout successive governments, police violence has remained a serious problem. Brazil recently commemorated 30 years since one of the darkest and most brutal events in its post-dictatorship history. On the 23rd of July 1993, police officers opened fire on a group of street children sleeping outside the Candelaria Church in Rio de Janeiro, killing eight. The killings would go on to be known as the Candelaria Massacre and spark calls for police reform, as well as wider questions about inequality and race in South America's largest country. But the incident is just one of dozens of similar massacres during the last three decades in which suspected or proven perpetrators were police or other security state actors. Now, just over 30 years since Candelaria, in a week marked by alarming levels of police violence, at least 45 people lost their lives in operations across three Brazilian states. Reports of threats, torture and abuses by police during Operation Shield in Sao Paulo have further fueled demands for accountability and justice. Images posted on police social media accounts that appear to celebrate rising death tolls only reinforce criticisms by human rights advocates. But in a country like Brazil, with nearly 50,000 murders a year, where violent crime is a daily reality for many citizens, police violence and hardline stances on crime carries political weight. Far-right former President Jair Bolsonaro was in part elected in 2018 because of his outspoken defense of police violence, not in spite of it, according to analysts. And while he lost the 2022 elections, a record number of former or serving police officers were elected as representatives to National Congress, none of whom have a progressive or human rights-driven discourse to fighting crime. Elsewhere, as Operation Shield was starting in Sao Paulo, in Bahia State, which is governed by Lula's leftist Workers' Party, 19 people died in clashes with the military police. Recently released data from Brazil's Public Security Forum, a non-profit, shows that last year, Bahia had the deadliest police force in Brazil. Also this week, in Rio de Janeiro, a police raid targeting drug traffickers in the Complexo da Penha favela resulted in 10 fatalities. Authorities claim all victims were suspected criminals killed in clashes, but critics argue that a thorough investigation is needed to scrutinize police actions. The country once again faces calls for accountability, human rights protection and meaningful law enforcement reforms. But given recent history, most analysts are not optimistic about these prospects. For World Report in Sao Paulo, I'm Sam Cowie.
Next, we go to Canada, where the longest-serving leader within the G7 is grabbing international headlines, not for his political agenda or government policies, but for his domestic troubles. Justin Trudeau and his wife of 18 years, Sophie Gregor Trudeau, announced this week that they were separating. She's moving out of the Prime Minister's residence, but the two say they will jointly raise, collaboratively, their three children. From Toronto, Dan Karpinchuk reports.
Although there have been rumours of troubles in the marriage off and on for some time, still the announcement came as a shock to most Canadians. In a brief statement, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said that after many difficult and meaningful conversations, he and his wife Sophie have made the decision to separate. Posting on Instagram, Trudeau said, "As always, we remain a close family with deep love and respect for each other and for everything we have built and continue to build." The statement was also shared on his wife's account, and for the well-being of the family, they asked Canadians to respect their privacy at this time. They have three children, Xavier, who is 15, Ella Grace, who is 14, and Hadrian, who is 9. A spokesman for the Prime Minister's office has confirmed that they have signed a formal separation agreement, adding that the two have worked to ensure that all legal and ethical steps have been taken and that will continue moving forward. Trudeau's office also said the pair are focused on raising their children in a safe, loving, and collaborative environment, and both would continue to be a presence in their children's lives, and Canadians can expect to see the entire family going off on vacations together, beginning next week to an undisclosed location. The official prime ministerial residence at 24 Sussex Drive in Ottawa is in a state of disrepair, and the couple have been living at Rideau Cottage across the river from Ottawa in Gatineau, Quebec. Sources say Gregoire Trudeau still plans to spend a significant amount of time at Rideau Cottage, adding that she has also already made other living arrangements and plans to move to a private residence nearby. As for her future role, she will no longer represent the Government of Canada and will no longer be considered the Prime Minister's spouse in any official capacity on the world stage. Also, she will not attend any official events as the Prime Minister's spouse. The two were married in 2005 in a widely covered ceremony in Montreal. They had met in their youth and reconnected later and began dating in 2003. In an anniversary post last year, Gregoire Trudeau acknowledged that long-term relationships can be challenging in so many ways. And in a post marking this year's anniversary, the Prime Minister shared a photo of them holding hands with the caption, "Every mile of this journey together is an adventure. I love you, Soph. Happy anniversary." Political analysts have described Gregoire Trudeau as an effective political asset for the Prime Minister, so it remains to be seen how this will affect his political profile. Sources say she also plans to continue with her own career, including the publication of two books, one a children's book, the other billed as an inspirational self-discovery and wellness book for adults called Closer Together, Knowing Ourselves, Loving Each Other. The family last appeared together at Canada Day events in Ottawa, and the couple traveled to London to attend the coronation of King Charles III. There is an unwritten rule in Canadian politics that personal and domestic issues are usually off-limits for criticism by political opponents. Across the political spectrum, there have been expressions of sympathy. The leader of the New Democratic Party, Jasmeet Singh, reached out to the Prime Minister, expressing sympathy over the news. Singh had pledged his party's support for Trudeau's minority government, provided some of his party's policies are to be implemented. Trudeau is the second prime minister to be separated from their spouse while in office. The first was his father, Pierre Elliott Trudeau, who in 1977 announced his separation from wife Margaret after months of speculation about the marriage. They filed for divorce 6 years later, and a year after that, Trudeau announced his resignation as leader of the Liberal Party. They had three children, Justin, Sasha, and Michelle. Justin Trudeau was affected by his parents' divorce and wrote about the impact it had on him. That may have led to some of the decisions he and Sophie Gregoire have made about their separation and its effect on their children. And while political opponents have held back any criticisms, that was not the case for many Canadians who immediately took to social media with what's been described as vile commentary, and even major newspapers running headlines the next day such as Splitsville and Like Father, Like Son. Some commentators have used the event to talk about the pressures faced by elected officials and how we can reconcile work and family in politics. As for Trudeau, it's unclear how this will affect him politically. He has already stated his intent to stay on as leader of the Liberal Party and to lead the party into the next federal election, expected possibly next year. Some pollsters say Canadians in general will have a certain empathy for Trudeau, given that many families also go through hard times. But how long that will be the case is difficult to determine. For World Report, I'm Dan Karpinchuk in Toronto.
Finally, we go to Cameroon, where the collapse of a building in the economic capital Douala has brought construction standards there into sharp focus. Dozens of people were killed and injured when a four-story complex collapsed. And although this collapse is the most deadly in recent times, multi-story building collapses are common in Douala, where housing is in demand. From Cameroon, Dorcas Akupe reports.
Since the wee hours of Sunday morning, July 24, when a four-story building collapsed on a smaller house in Douala, Cameroon's largest city, the death toll has been rising. At least 37 people have died so far, with 17 others injured. A few of them are still in a critical condition. Most of the injured victims were rushed to the La Quintinie Hospital, one of the biggest health centers in the Central African nation. A computer scientist, Prosper Chinda, who was one of the first on the scene on Sunday, told Agence France-Presse one survivor got out with just scratches and a baby was found safe and sound. Chinda lives a few minutes' walk from the block and said there had been some sort of event with music going on when the collapse occurred. Samuel Dieudonné Ivaha Dibua, the governor of Cameroon's Littoral region, where Douala is the capital, immediately rushed to the scene of the incident and assured the population that the rescue team made up of the firefighters, brigade, Red Cross and other rescue workers are doing their best to search for survivors and that no one will be left in the rubble. Though building collapses are common in Douala, this is one of the most deadly disasters to have struck Cameroon's commercial hub in recent times. It was in 2016 that a similar incident like this happened and killed five people. Building collapses are caused by natural disasters and also by poor structural design and faulty constructions. A few years back, local authorities identified 500 buildings in danger of collapse. Cameroon's Minister of Housing and Urban Development visited the scene of the incident and extended the government's condolences. The top government official said the state was very sorry that so many people had to die due to the non-observation of building documents and non-respect of urbanization. And 48 hours after the Douala collapse, a similar incident occurred in Goundéré, in the northern part of the country. It was a four-story building under construction that snuffed life off four people after it collapsed on another house. The four people who died was a woman and her three children. Cameroon's President Paul Biya has ordered that all houses poorly constructed should be demolished. Investigations to ascertain the real cause of the tragedies have been opened, and the Minister of Housing has instructed local authorities to ensure that everybody constructing acquires a building permit and respect the town planning standards. For World Report, I'm Dorcas Akupe reporting from Mara, Cameroon.
Well, that's it from World Report for today. If you want to listen back to the programme, you can go to rte.ie/World Report or wherever you get your podcasts. We're back again at the same time next week. Until then, from myself, Justin McCarthy, and all the team, thanks for listening and take care.